Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 116 of season 7 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is from the Rocketeer Minute, from the October Sky Minute, a pilot, a whole bunch of stuff. Welcome
thanks,
to the
Rob.
Show,
it's great to be back.
Yeah, well, you know, we have pilots in the next few days, so I figured, Hal is the best person to have here. You know, I'm gonna test you a little bit on your expertise about the whole thing, since you'll be able to fill me and listeners in to, you know, how certain things might work or whatever it is. But we'll see how that goes. But I'm glad to have you back on this
evening. That's my pleasure.
Minute 116 begins with Simon deciding to respond, and ends with Simon getting nice and comfortable with Katya. We ended things on Friday with one of Simon's men making a toast to fallen comrades. And the camera then gives us a shot of Simon's face. And we're not really sure if he is pleased about this or not. You know, is this something that should have been brought up or not, or things like that? I mean, they did have some of their men get killed along the way. Do you have any recollection as to how many of their men have died?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I know the body count is always high, but I certainly wasn't keeping score of the body count along the way, but I'll be anxious to hear what it is. I know it's always a big number in these films, but you know, you mentioning that, Simon, that look on his face when the camera does come back to him, that he's giving the toast and he's leading the victory lap and all these sorts of things. And then, you know, one of the men sort of speaks up and wants to give the toast and is in very much a subtle way correcting or rebuking him in front of everybody. And it's just great to see that on Simon's face. But anyway, so I thought that was a very well played little interaction there, and it really raised the question of sort of, you know, what is Simon's ultimate relationship with his crew going to be? But anyway, you were talking body count. So where are we at this point in the picture?
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, we're towards the end of the movie, but the body count isn't as high as you might think. There, it's John has killed 10 of Simon's men, and Simon has killed one of his men. We have the four guys in the elevator, who were the first ones for John to get rid of there,
right?
Yep. Then two guys that were in the truck, you know, where John walks up to the truck and starts shooting into the truck and kills them, you know, talking about Santa Claus.
Yep.
Then we have the two guys that were chasing after them on the highway, that got killed.
Okay.
And then we have the two guys on the boat. One guy who gets sliced in half by the cable.
Oh, right.
And then the other guy who just it says don't shoot, and then John shoots him. You know, now we have Targo, who Simon has killed. And I mean, the next few days we have further proof as to why Simon felt compelled to finally kill Targo.
Yep, that's coming up, isn't it?
Exactly. So, I mean, again, that's for a Die Hard movie. I don't know if you know, 10 plus 1 is considered a lot at this point in the movie. I mean, in the original 13, you know, there were 12 terrorists plus Hans. So, you know, in the end, they didn't even all die. So once again, I think we have a body count of 11 terrorists, you know, from that one. And then in Die Hard 2, the count is not so easy to do, but we know that there's I think 11 again. Wow, this number keeps popping up. 11 that John basically gets rid of along the way, and then you have the plane blowing up, which takes out like another dozen or so. You know, so yeah, it's you know, I guess they want you to think that there's a higher body count with terrorists than there really are.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's a funny thing, because I think one of the things that the original Die Hard, what I loved so much about it, was that it had this, it's over the top action. It's, you know, pitch perfect 80s action, but you can argue that it's sort of grounded in reality. It's like, this is an amazing far-fetched tale, but you could almost believe there's no one moment where you roll your eyes and say, oh my gosh, there's absolutely no way that any of this could ever possibly happen. You suspend your disbelief and you go along with it. But then, I don't know if you're aware of this, Rob, but I was in law enforcement for several years, quite a while ago.
Yes.
And, you know, spent my career, thankfully, never having to fire my weapon except in training.
As it should be.
And, you know, you drew it many, many times, but yeah, very, very happy that that never happened. And so if I'm sitting there thinking, you know, in, let's see, where are we? And this film is in 95, so years or so in the life of John McClane, and
he's seven years.
Oh, even 7 years. Yeah, that's right. I was 88 to 95, right? I always was thinking it was a little bit earlier than that. And here we are, we're tallying up. He's, you know, in the low 30s and the number of terrorists that he's taken out just in his life as either an on-duty or off-duty New York City police officer. It's amazing.
Yeah, I guess it's nice to know that, you know, that Hal never really needed to, you know, save people at the Nakatomi building or in Dulles yes. or in New York City. And that's why your count is much lower.
That's right. My count is infinitely lower, in fact. But, the lives that I managed to save here and there, it was all done without firing a shot. And I'm perfectly happy.
I was a police officer for about a year. Draw my gun a few times, but I never had to use it. And I was in the military for many years also. Again, thankfully, never had to use it in live fire, you know, non exercises, I guess you can say.
Right.
You know, that type of thing. So yeah, it's one of my favorite quotes from the movie True Romance, where Christian Slater, his character, my philosophy is, it's better to have a gun and not need it than to need it and not have one. So
yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that sort of works for that from that perspective.
Now I'm curious, is it still the case in Israel where everyone has at least a short mandatory period of military training?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most people have a 3-year mandatory service that you must do, which is usually done from 18 to 21.
That's really remarkable.
Especially now, since unfortunately, you know, not the end of politics, but over the last year, you know, we've lost 700 soldiers. You know, it's something that, that we're going to continue to do a lot of, they don't have the same laws in America, but there are quite a large number of people who, you know, after their military service are walking around with weapons, and you're allowed to walk around with them. You know, it's not a question of just needing it, having it in your house,
right?
You know, stuff like that.
Well, so, it is such a different environment. But my ongoing hopes for you and all of your countrymen to get through this latest thing unscathed and hopefully stronger than ever.
That is the plan. Let's hope so.
You're here.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, we're starting to talk about the fact that Simon gave a very cold look at this guy who wanted to raise a bottle to fallen comrades. And, you know, they give us a few seconds that we're not really sure what Simon's going to do or whatever. And it's very interesting the way that they edit and shoot this little scene, because, you know, we get a shot of Simon wondering, you know, his face looking back and forth. And then he gives like a little cheer. And then the next shot is a shot of Katya just looking at him. And I mean, I don't know if you've noticed this, but she has, you know, this really ugly scar on her neck.
Yeah.
That really just looks like a plastic bag or something like that. You know, it doesn't look like the special effects that they used there, or the makeup was done properly.
Right. Yeah. And I wondered about that too. And just sort of the choice to do it that way and to make it, as you said, look not very good. And, you know, and then what that says about her backstory.
Right. Well, again, we've never heard her speak in this entire movie up
That's
until now.
right.
And spoiler, over the next week before we end this, she doesn't speak either. So, I guess it lends for us to believe. I mean, they talked about earlier in the movie the fact that there was a bomb slipped between Katya and Targo Sheets that they thought killed them. But apparently they missed. So maybe that's an injury from that. Maybe that's just showing us that how close it was that she came to actually getting caught,
Right.
I guess, all those years ago or whatever it was with that type of thing. And then the shot goes back to Simon, who's still sitting on the hood of one of these trucks, and with the remark that this man made, and therefore he's going to do it. And if you look, you can see at about 4 seconds into the minute, you can see Katya standing over on the side. She's not that far away. He's basically looking right at
Oh,
her.
sure.
And she's swigging on the champagne bottle also. As Simon takes his swig, he looks at her. And again, they show just via this edit how much of a connection these two actually have, which is why they got rid of Targo. The two of them have decided that they're the ones who are going to hook up,
Right.
and that's why they framed Targo more or less and then decided to kill him.
So do you think that Simon is like into the scar? You think he likes that, or
I
I
would think
guess
so.
so.
That would be
Yeah.
my guess. I can't guarantee it, but it's very possible. And then she gives him like this seductive look as she's taking a swig on her champagne. They give us a close up, and then she turns around and starts walking away. And then we see him watching her walk away and apparently getting an idea.
Exactly.
Or I wouldn't even say getting an idea. It's following her lead. That's more or less what it is here. She's hinted something at him, and he's decided, okay, I have time for this. He gets off the truck, turns to one of his men, and goes, "Lieutenant, take over." And like he just rushes through the crowd, towards where she is. And at this point, this lieutenant starts saying, "All right, listen up, first squad. You muster up in half an hour in the school bus. You'll be the lacrosse team." So I mean, I like the way that they I sort of like the way that they do this, because they're trying to show us the deception that they're trying to pull off
Right.
here. So it's an interesting way to do it, to show that here we're all going to be dressing up in costumes. This is early Halloween, in order to try to get away or whatever it is. But the whole thing is very strange, because we don't know where they're planning on going, like where their home base is. I mean, I know that on Friday Simon says, we have to decide what country that we want to take over, but where are you until then? Like what is your current plan
Right.
for that whole thing? Now, lacrosse. What do you know about the game lacrosse?
Just nothing. What I know is that it's French for the cross, and that my friend Eric dabbled in it in college, and beyond that, absolutely zero.
You have any clue as to maybe where it came from? Like what area of the world?
I mean, I associate it with Europe, and I think I would have originally thought France, but again, those are very blind guesses.
Okay, it's actually a Native American
Really?
game
No kidding. I oh.
that they were able to trace back to at least 1100 AD, and then when the missionaries, the Jesuit priests, came to present day Canada, they had learned how to play the game, and already by the 17th century they had started creating their own versions of it, of how you can do that.
No kidding. Well,
And
I
I mean,
had.
these games would go on for days, the way that they were playing them and stuff like that. I never knew that either.
That's
It, to
really
me, it was
interesting.
very, very shocking to
Yeah.
read that this is, you know, that the Mohawks were playing it, you know.
Right. That's really something. And here I live as a transplant, but for 15 years in the state of Wisconsin, and we have a city of La Crosse on the eastern, or excuse me, western border of the state. And I wonder now, is that there's a lot of Native American named towns and cities and villages here in Wisconsin. I wonder if that's some connection to the sport. I'll have to look that up.
That would be interesting to
That
know.
would be.
Yeah. Right. So I mean, obviously it spread throughout the world after that. You know, it wasn't, it was, yeah, I guess it's part of the triangle trade.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, that's really something. No idea.
Simon is then walking away and like he passes a truck and now how, what's on the truck? Do you see something on the
I
truck?
do see something on the truck under a tarp. I see an arrow,
Well, it's half under a tarp,
partly under a tarp. But I mean, it's an exciting reveal. It's a helicopter, and it's an aerospatiale Gazelle helicopter. Now, some movie buffs out there might look at particularly the aft fuselage and the tail rotor when you get a better look at this helicopter and recognize it. That same type was the basis for the title helicopter of the movie Blue Thunder, which is an all-time favorite of mine. They modified the front quite a bit and gave it this very heavy, sort of armored-looking, faceted cockpit, whereas the real Gazelle, as you see here, is nice, very curvy and very sort of streamlined look. As a quick aside, speaking of this Gazelle helicopter, I don't want to go too far down a rabbit hole, but as you know quite well, Rob, as we've discussed to the nth degree, we're recording this not too long after my big annual aviation event here in Oshkosh, and
Of
a
course.
private owner brought his Gazelle that was used in the French, I guess, the Armée de l'Air, and it's still painted and still kitted out just as if it were in the French army, but now it's just something that he flies for fun and enjoys displaying and stuff like that. So I'm going to be writing a story on it pretty soon. So I'm going to be diving deep in the near future into the whole world of the Gazelle helicopter. But I think it was the first one I'd ever seen. It's first one, certainly first military one I'd ever seen in private hands here in the US.
Oh wow, that is very, very cool. Have you ever flown one though?
I haven't.
Or
I've
no?
only got a very, very limited experience in helicopters, and that's not for lack of desire. It's generally more lack of money. They're very, very expensive. But
I didn't see you should go buy
well,
one.
I
I was
mean, but
thinking to fly
even
one.
to rent one or pay somebody's gas to go fly one with them or something like that is very, very pricey. So I'm not rated to fly helicopters, although I have, taken the controls just a little bit in a classic Bell 47, which is the best known to the world as the MASH helicopter.
Right, that's true. Yeah, your comment about renting and buying helicopters reminded me of Clear and Present Danger, you know, where
Yes.
Harrison Ford's character wants to go, you know, rent, he wants to go get a helicopter. And he goes, "How much does the helicopter cost?" He goes, "It's $1 million." And he says, "Okay, how much it cost to rent it? One million dollars."
$1 million, yes. And he just puts down his CIA company credit card.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. But yeah, so. Right, so we see, you know, this helicopter underneath this tarp, and the guy, I guess the pilot or the maintenance guy who's handling it, you know, then says to Simon, "The plane's in Nova Scotia. We can leave in 20 minutes." And then it's great the way that this whole thing goes because Simon at that point has changed his mind about what he really wants because he then looks and he sees. Katya, once again, seductively walking up the
Right.
stairs, and then he turns to the guy and he goes, "No rush."
No rush, exactly. Yeah, and
Which I don't know if it would have been funnier if he would have said, "Okay, I'll be here in 10 minutes." You know,
right,
it's
or
like,
2 minutes.
exactly. So yeah, it's I like the way that they do this, even though, I mean, we're going to talk a lot about the fact about how this ending compares to other endings and stuff like that in the movie, because this is one of three endings to the
Right.
movie. There's the ending in the original script, there's the ending that they filmed, which in some ways I like better than this
Oh.
ending. And then there's this is the ending that you know was finally tacked on, which again is one of the problems that I find about these particular minutes is that this whole scenario seems a little bit too tacked on to the whole story. Yeah, but we'll
Right.
get there. I think tomorrow we'll talk more about the fact of why I feel it feels so tacked on with the way that they do things here. But Simon realizes that he doesn't need to be in any rush. Do you think I'm trying to figure out here if Simon and Katya have been carrying on a very long affair or they've been teasing each other up until now, and that finally she's given him the okay, and he's like, okay, well, I might be in the middle of creating this grand army, but hey, why not? She's finally given me the steal home sign, and I'm gonna go do it. I don't know.
I always got the sense that that it was that it was the latter, that they had this idea, but this was the first time they'd acted on it. But I don't know, maybe we'd
Okay.
never know for sure.
No, I don't think we're meant to know. It doesn't really make a difference because as we're going to find out, this isn't going to work out the way that they planned it either.
Exactly. It never
So
does when you're
we'll
the bad guy in Die Hard.
apparently not. Apparently not, especially if your last name is Gruber. And at this point, Simon, is the shot changes and we no longer and now we're back to these guys getting all of their costumes in order. I thought it was very funny the way when the scene when the shot comes back to these guys getting ready for this costume party, you
Right.
see a whole bunch of them that are holding what look like costumes that could be lacrosse outfits or
Oh,
whatever it
sure.
is. They're going all out on this Halloween trick or treat
They really are.
and at this point then he screams this lieutenant guy who he's not listed in IMDb, I couldn't figure out who he is. He goes, "And Jürgen, you'll be the Padre." And he throws to one of the guys like this guy in glasses. He throws him a priest costume or whatever it is. Which again, it's sort of funny, but this all doesn't really make much sense.
Right.
What type of cover stories create that they need a lacrosse team and a padre?
Yeah. You would think that
It
the
sounds like
lacrosse,
Mad Libs.
it does exactly. One, you just choose a word from every column.
They were filling out the script and they said, okay, well, what are we going to use here? And it goes, okay, give me a noun.
Yes, exactly. And the
give me a
lacrosse team
sport.
actually
Give me a
sort of
sport.
works okay because that's a great way to sort of cover a group of sort of military age males who were all fit and things like that. It's like suddenly that makes sense when you see some lacrosse gear. And I think it was smart too to choose a sport that I always thought was European, and I've learned very much to the contrary now. But choose something like that even a successful lacrosse team wouldn't be as well known. I mean, obviously you couldn't have these guys dressing up as the New York Yankees or the Green Bay Packers or some sports team that certainly in this country would be instantly recognizable and expose their
Well, right
fraud.
now they're in Canada.
Well, true, but I think even in
I guess
Canada,
as long as they don't dress up as hockey players, they should be
yeah, as
fine.
long as it's not hockey, touche.
It's just interesting the way that they just throw that out there. And literally they throw out, the
Yes.
Padre aspect and stuff like that. I mean, it's a joke that's thrown out there that they never get any play on afterwards.
Yeah, there isn't
You know,
really any
it's just
payoff, is there?
that's right, nothing. It's something that we see and that's it. And again, it doesn't give us enough of information as to what's really going on here.
Right.
So what is the plan? I don't know. It's as if, again, I mentioned about the fact that I find this a bit tacked on, but I think that's part of it also, the idea to hear, okay, where what's the plan? We want to know that there is a plan, not just, these next few minutes all feel a little disjointed in how they're putting it all together.
Yeah.
It would have been nice, like with in the first Die Hard, we know the plan. In the second Die Hard, we know the plan. Whether it's through the bad guys or through John or whatever it is, we know that, okay, it's a robbery. They're planning on blowing up the building and then getting away with all the money in the ambulance. Okay, fine. In the second one, it's the idea that, okay, we're going to pretend that we're going to go capture Stewart, and then we're going to get on the plane and fly away with them to some island earning 20% or whatever it is.
Right.
Here, there's nothing like that. It's like, what the hell's going on? What is the ultimate plan? The ultimate plan, okay, they got the money. They have $180 billion or whatever, or in gold. Okay, now the only hint they give us is the fact that they have to decide tomorrow what country they want to buy,
Right.
and that's it. So it's a little too disjointed. I still love this movie. I don't think it doesn't take away enough from it, but it asks more questions than the other two movies did.
Yeah, I would agree with that
And I
completely.
find that a little frustrating because it asks questions without answers.
And you may well have covered this in previous episodes, but I have to point out, I thought it was interesting that there's that period when we're supposed to think, and Simon has said that the plan is to simply destroy the gold and affect the economic balance and things like that, and that's right out of Goldfinger,
Correct.
the old Bond movie. So again, you've probably beaten that to death, but I thought that was interesting. That's one of my all-time favorite films as well, and just you had Goldfinger wanting to irradiate the gold and vaporize a lot of it and increase the value of his own holdings, and so we have this nod to that, and
Correct.
then of course we find out that there's another couple or three or 30 layers to the plan, whatever the ultimate plan actually is.
Correct, but one of the things I like about the way that they do that part of the plan is the idea that if everyone thinks that this gold is destroyed, then it still will change the economic situation about gold,
Sure.
and therefore their gold will now be worth more because everyone will think that there's less gold out there than there really is.
Yeah, that's a great point. And as long as they don't try to sell it all at once.
That's right. That's
Yeah.
right, which I don't think they plan on doing it, even though they probably also don't plan on putting it in the bank,
Most likely
because
not.
they know how unsafe those banks are,
Yes,
especially the
they've
Federal
proven that
Reserve.
very clearly.
Exactly. And then Simon, continues walking and enters. It comes to a door. Now, what's very funny is on the door you can see that there's a calendar that's standing on that that's stuck on the door.
Okay.
There's like a ship on the door on the calendar. I obviously can't identify what the ship is, but it also says March underneath it as the date of the calendar. Now that just goes to tell us that this must be an abandoned place that nobody's been around for a while because we've already established that this movie takes place in late September, early October,
Right.
and I don't think that the gap between Friday and today, or Thursday and today, is 6 months.
Sure.
Which we'll also know when we see John and Zeus. They're still all beaten up. It's not
Right.
as if they've had time to recover,
Exactly.
that type of thing. But
Yeah.
I just thought it was very interesting that they have this calendar that clearly says March.
Yeah, it's an
And
interesting it's an interesting catch, and you wonder, is that is that set dressing to make us think anything in particular, or is it just you know, that he tagged a calendar with a freighter up on the wall, and you know, certainly nobody is going to be analyzing this movie minute by minute 30 years from now, and nobody's going to care what month it says.
That's right. But we
But
do.
we do, exactly. We really do. Now, I was just scrubbing a little bit. Do you ever get a clear shot of the year on the
No,
calendar?
I
You
tried.
really don't, do you?
I checked, wasn't able to figure it out.
Yeah, you almost do,
They we can see the one, but that doesn't help us.
but it doesn't.
We know it's in the 1900s. That's about
It
it.
does narrow it down, but not much.
Yeah. It means it isn't taking place at least 5 years in the future,
Yes,
from this movie.
exactly.
It's taking place in the present or the past. Then Simon walks in the room and gets jumped on by Katya. Talk about having a rough relationship.
Right.
She jumps on his back and it twirls around, and then he flips her over and lays her on the table. And then as he's laying on the table, he rips open her shirt. We get to see that, she and she doesn't seem to mind, obviously.
Right. Yeah,
But
that's
what
clearly
I
what she
found
had
very,
planned.
yeah, exactly. But what I find very interesting is that, here we get a clearer shot of the scars on her shoulder, on her neck.
Yeah.
But if you look at her shirt, you can see her wetness, which possibly was over that, makeup.
Oh, really?
Okay,
I'm
if you
taking a
look
look here.
at
That's
second 51, if you look at second 51,
yeah. Oh, sure. Well, that seems to line up just almost perfectly,
it
doesn't
really
it?
does. Yes.
Oh.
Someone screwed up there.
Yeah, I think so. He got that star put on and it was still damp, and
That's
there
right.
we have it.
That's right. He takes off his jacket, and they both start getting a little bit of frisky, a little frisky. And then he leans over and kisses her, and we hear a zipper unzip.
Yes.
That's it. And that is how the minute will end.
What a perfect ending.
And well, he's exactly. So yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
I don't think so about the minute in particular.
Right. So once again, we have nothing to talk about in the script because the none of this appears in the script. But every Monday we have a segment called McTiernan Monday, where my guests will give their top five John McTiernan films. There's only 11 to choose from,
Right.
but let's see what you got for us, Hal. Why don't you start with number five and work your way up?
All right. So this was tough for me because, outside of my top three, I didn't have any huge favorites. But in looking at his body of work, I chose for number five one that I haven't seen since I saw it in the theater, but I've been meaning to watch again because I'm curious about it. And I remember enjoying it, and that would be The Last Action Hero.
Okay.
So number four would be Predator. So, one that I always enjoyed, but didn't have any particular impact on my life.
Okay.
Number three, Thomas Crown Affair. I just have fond memories of that one as one of the first sort of super slick heist pictures that I really got into. Thought that
Okay,
was
very cool.
terrific. Coming up, number two, and this was tough because it was a very close race with one and two. So number two, the original Die Hard, and number one, Hunt for Red October. I thought just I do think that both of those, one and two, are what I call quote unquote perfect movie. I don't watch them and say, oh, I'd love it if it wasn't for this, or I would change that, or I would change the casting or anything else. Just engaging, beautifully done, and eminently rewatchable. So there's my five.
Okay, that's actually great. I know that you're friends with Chris, right? And so when Chris was on at the beginning of the season, so one of the things that we talked about was we're talking about planes and submarines and stuff like that. And on that particular day, someone had sent me a meme that said, There are more airplanes in the ocean than there are submarines in the sky.
Yes, exactly. That's
And you
often
just
used
reminded
as
me of that with
that's funny.
that.
That's often used as the as sort of meme evidence that submarines are safer than airplanes or something like that, because we don't tend to leave the airplanes up there. They will always come down regardless.
That's right. All right. Very cool. Thank you very much for that list. So, Hal, why don't you go ahead and give us tell everyone where they can find Hal
You
Grind.
can find me on the major social channels, just at Hal Bryan, very imaginative word. And then otherwise, involved in, as we're recording this, we're about two-thirds, maybe pushing three-quarters of the way through production and recording of the October Sky Minute. So we're looking at Joe Johnston's 1999 feature based on the life of Homer Hickam, who has become a quite a good friend of the show as well. So having a great time with the October Sky Minute. The other big one that we had completed, but we got a couple of special episodes in mind for somewhere down the road. That'd be the Rocketeer Minute as well. And you mentioned my friend Chris. That's Chris Henry. So he are among a handful of people who share hosting duties for another podcast that we do through work at EAA, and that's the Green Dot. So you can search for that. You won't hear me on every episode, but you'll hear me on quite a few of them, and it's a lot of good aviation stuff. So
All right, very,
if you're not sick
very
of my
cool. Very
voice,
cool.
there's more of it out there.
Yeah, I highly recommend all of this. All of the
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find my website, moveaboutminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to moveaboutminute@moveaboutminute.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay.
Johnny comes marching home again, hurrah, hurrah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hurrah, hurrah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.